You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. How are you guys? I hope you're having a wonderful Tuesday or whatever day you're watching or listening. I appreciate you for listening to the podcast and supporting it. It's a little podcast that keeps going thanks to you guys listening and my patrons. If you don't know what a patron is, they're folks who support the podcast by giving back, and you can go to Patreon, patreon.com/insideofyou, become a patron. I'll send you a message. And there's a lot of perks, and it's a lot of fun. It's like a big community now. A lot of people have become friends and family, and it really supports the podcast and keeps this sucker going. So if you like what you're listening to, appreciate it if you did that. Also, you can go to my Linktree on Instagram at the Michael Rosenbaum on Instagram, and go to the Linktree, and you can see Cameo, and I'm on Cameo, and the what conventions I'm doing, and anything else I'm doing, music. My band Sunspin, you go to sunspin.com. There's merch there. You can get Zooms. You can go to talkvillepodcast.com and get Zooms with me and Welling. You can go there and buy some cool merch. And the Inside You online store has a bunch of cool stuff like Lexmas scripts signed and ship keys and tumblers and a lot of pictures, autographed pictures, so you know they're coming from me. Cool stuff. Very exciting. And I also want to give a shout out to Spooky Empire in Orlando. I had an absolute blast. Peter, thank you for having me. It was just a great time being at a horror convention, Ryan, with, you know, like Robert Englund, Freddy Krueger, and Heather Langenkamp, and Nightmare on Elm Street people, and The Lost Boys, my friend Jason Patrick, Kiefer Sutherland was there, Nick Frost, who we love, he was there. It was a great time. Great time. So thank you for that. Great weekend. I'm going to go there next year, whether they invite me or not. I'll just go and shop. I bought so much stuff. It was so much fun. It's they do it around Halloween every year, so you guys got to go to that. What else? The Animal Rescue Mission, if you want to donate. They're amazing. My friend Shira, animalrescuemission.org, homeless situation, foodonfoot.org, Ronald McDonald House, helping families while their children are going through major surgeries or dealing with a lot. These are places that I give back to and I appreciate. And yeah. You know, it's funny as we have a big guest potentially coming on. It sounds like it, and Ryan might not be here. I can't tell you the guest in case they cancel, but it's like the biggest guest we ever have, and Ryan is going to try and work it out.
Well, yeah.
Oh, you can't miss that one. I don't know. Great show for you today. I mean, it's a good one. It's John Glover. I mean, he was my dad on Smallville. You can't beat that. It's so much fun talking to him. I'll tell you. It was serious. It was funny. It was, I learned a lot more than I thought. John's been on before, but this one, you know, made me tear up a little, and very honest and raw. I think he felt like it was therapy at times, and I hope you guys feel the same way. What are our handles so people can follow us?
Oh, they're at Inside of You Pod on Twitter and at Inside of You Podcast on Instagram and Facebook.
And you can watch on YouTube if you want. But subscribe, write a review on Apple. It really helps the show and spread the word. Without further ado, let's just get into it. Let's get inside of my father, John Glover.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
All right, we're here with Mr. Glover.
Uh-huh.
You know, what's kind of funny is, I'm going to speak for Ryan, but Ryan here, he doesn't have a microphone today because we didn't set it up. But so don't talk to him and ask him questions. You could talk to him, but he just can't answer. But Ryan has been watching Smallville for the first time on our Talkville podcast. So he's a little, would you say you're a little excited?
Yeah. Okay. It's cool to see you in person.
Yeah.
Yeah. After what we're two and a half seasons in.
Yep.
Uh huh.
Yeah. Three and a half.
Two and a half, because we're halfway.
Oh, yeah, season. Yeah. We're almost done. Anyway, we're watching, you know, we watch Talkville, and most of these episodes I never saw.
I didn't watch them.
You never saw them?
I didn't watch the show.
You never once saw yourself on Smallville.
I did in the beginning, and then I stopped watching.
Why was that?
Because I didn't want to. I just felt I would be I would be better if I wasn't aware of that. I didn't want to look that way or this way or whatever. way.
You were self-conscious. You didn't
I didn't want to be self-conscious about it when I was working. That I, you know.
Do you do that a lot? Have you done that with a lot of your work where?
In the beginning, I used to look at myself all the time and love to. And then as I get older, I stopped.
Why is that?
I don't know. Maybe because I'm older.
I was going to talk to you about that because, look, you're not old. You're very youthful. You move around like you're still. How old do you feel, by the way? Because you're 79?
Yeah.
How old do you feel?
11.
Most. You feel young.
Adam looks at me and he says, "You're 11." I still feel like I was when I felt I was in my 20s.
Really?
Yeah.
So you still have that. Do you wake up? Does it take you longer to wake up? Because for me, with my back, it takes me a while to wake up. I'm kind of like out of it. Do you wake up early or you have a early thirst for life?
Yeah.
You wait, what time?
Well, this morning I got up at 5.
Why?
Well, because I thought it was 6, but I was up.
What do you do for all those extra hours?
Well, I get the papers.
Okay.
Right? And the woman across the street from us, Bev, she's, you know, so I get her paper and go put it over up on her, right? She has a sort of a thing right up on her, outside her front door,
right.
And I just put it so she doesn't have to bend over.
Is she older?
So I get her older. First, I get
her paper.
Yeah, I get her paper and put it up on her thing, and then I came and come and get our New York Times. She gets the L.A. Times.
Right.
We get the New York Times. And Adam maybe gets up at 7 or 8 usually.
Right. And so...
So I have that time to read the paper.
And you do this every morning. You wake up, you get her Bev's paper, you get your paper, you have coffee, you get going.
Right.
Do you feel like, you know, I always feel like if I wait, the later I wake up, the less time I have to deal with myself, that I have not as much time to fill the day. So if I wake up at, I still wake up early, I wake up at 8.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, there's a lot of hours in the day to do things. So, you know, are things different now that you feel like you're older? Like you don't feel like there's enough to do, you're not doing enough, that you feel bored, or you're always keeping yourself busy?
Well, see, when I'm not, well, I don't know what to busy doing what. I mean, I knit scarves all the time.
You do? You've always done that?
Well, not always.
Well,
On
Smallville, you used to knit scarves and things.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But so I'm making things. But still, I mean, if I'm not working, I don't have a job. You know, I'm much more comfortable being the characters I play than I am being me. So it's because I'm not me. It's freer. I can do things that I wouldn't do for me.
Right. So do you feel like you're how to be comfortable with you more now? You're forced to be more comfortable with, especially with the strike now.
I don't know. I haven't worked in a while.
No one has.
Yeah, but I keep thinking something that's wrong with me.
Well, you can't work because there's no work to be had.
And I have a fear now because my mind isn't as sharp as it was. Because I don't even remember having to sit down and learn lines. I mean, I would read. You know, I could read a speech and pretty much get it. So, they came in my head. That doesn't happen anymore.
So you have to go over your lines a lot more. Do you have to go over them significantly more than you?
I don't remember because I don't, I mean, this is only recently.
How recent?
Maybe a year or so that I've just, I don't even remember what the last time I worked was.
Well, you did The Walking Dead, Fear of the Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah.
And you had a lot of lines in that.
Oh, yeah,
And you managed to do it.
Oh, yeah, I did that, yeah. So I guess that was the last one.
And that wasn't that long ago.
Was it?
Well, then a year or two?
Yeah, well, that a year is a long time.
I mean, that's a lot, but it sounds to me like you have the same kind of thing as I have, is it's not always comfortable being, you know, you're used to playing a character, doing things, and when you don't, you're in a situation where, okay, now I'm with myself for long periods of time.
Yeah.
And that kind of fucks with you.
And the day is boring. It's like, okay, how many scarves can I knit? Mm-hmm. So there's a point where I have to stop. And then what do I do every day? I mean, I do my hike in the morning. Adam and I go walk around the top of the mountain to start the day. And then I think, what the fuck am I going to do today? What I did yesterday? Or
yeah, so it gets kind of mundane.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you're not alone. I think a lot of times you're probably in your head, you're thinking, what am I doing? What am I? You know, I'm not working. I can't, you know, but I think everybody feels that way. What do I do with myself? That's why, you know, people usually have kids. They have to tend to their kids. They have $10. You don't have children. You have your partner, Adam. Mm-hmm. You have a life. You can go out to dinner when you want. You can travel when you want. Mm. You can do all these things. But it sounds to me like your whole life, and it's obvious, you've been acting since how old? Teenager?
Yeah. Yeah. It started in high school and then college. And then I moved to New York when I got out of college, and I started working almost right away. It was when all the regional theaters were starting around the country, you know. So I learned in front of audiences because I was too chicken to take a class because I thought that the other actors were probably going to be better than me, and I wouldn't be.
Well, we all go through that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you started doing all this theater. You started doing all these things. I think your whole life, my point is, your whole life you've been acting. And also, I have also realized that, you know, for a long period of time, even today, I need validation. I need, like, I'm on a set. Great job. You see it. People like you. People. And when you're not doing something, when you can't get that away from work, where do you get the validation?
Mm-hmm.
And do you think that's part of it? Do you think you miss that validation? I guess the camaraderie and all the other things that, you know, take place on a set. But do you feel like you like to be validated?
Yeah, that's what I do. I act. I be other people.
You be other people.
I be other people. I create other people.
And you do a great job of it, obviously.
Thank you.
Do you want to do this till the day you die? Do you want to act as long as possible?
Yeah, I'd like to say, I saw John Glover on stage when he died. I'll die on stage.
Really?
Yeah.
That's you want to work to the last minute?
Yeah.
Why?
Why? Because that's what I do. That's what gets me off.
Well, there are other things.
Yeah, but that's the best thing. When I'm doing somebody, I'm being somebody else. It's freeing.
Really? That's how your excitement is. Being someone else is how you thrive.
Yeah.
Pretending to be someone else. Yeah. Do you love yourself? I know that's a really weird question, but do you like yourself? Can you look in the mirror and go, you know, John, I think you're a good guy. I love you.
Sometimes I like myself. Sometimes I don't.
What don't you like about yourself?
Less. I see. I grew up less than because I was different than the other little boys. My dad was so athletic, and he taught me how to hit a ball and throw a ball and do a football and throw a football. Right. And he taught me well, but I wasn't interested in it.
Mm-mm.
So I was made fun of a lot when I was in school because
you felt you were different. People thought you were different.
Yeah, less than, and that gave me this feeling of being less than. I remember in high school, we were doing The Importance of Being Earnest, I think. That was the play with June Ellen Kitzmiller.
Right.
Yeah.
June Ellen Kitzmiller.
She was a good actor, too. But and she could sing. I sing off key, so I can't do musicals, but I love musicals.
I do, too.
Yeah. Yeah, but it...
but you did that.
I remember we had in the cafeteria, there was where we did the play. The whole school came.
You did a play in a cafeteria.
Yeah. Well, we didn't have a stage, so in the cafeteria room, they took the tables out and set a platform up, and they did it there. And there was an assembly where we sort of did a preview of it. And so I was sort of, you know, with an English accent and everything, and I was doing the thing, and people started laughing at me. And it felt, I had control of all these people that I went to school with, a lot of which who didn't like me or anything, but I could make them laugh.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
Judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Do you know, I had, I talked about it, but I had the same thing. When I was a little boy, I was the smallest kid. I was not popular, all the stuff. You guys, listeners, have heard this. But I finally did a play, and it was the first time anybody paid any attention to me.
We're the same. We're the same
any
people.
Any attention. Yeah. A popular kid walked down and said the hallway the next day and said, you were really funny in that play.
Yep.
And I, from that moment on, from a 16-year-old boy, 17-year-old boy, I said, not being me is what I'm going to be.
We're the same.
And I think that's why a lot of my depression, a lot of my anxiety throughout the years, and I'm, you know, I think it's because all of a sudden you get to a certain age and you have to spend more time with yourself. And I spent most of my time on sets and making people laugh and entertaining and being the clown. And but when the clown, and when the clown comes home, you know what happens. So dealing with yourself, and I had like a midlife crisis, and I didn't know what to do with myself. And, you know, all I could say is at least it's happening now. But, you know, do you think you know who you are at this point at 79 years old? Do you feel like I know who I am? I know who John Glover is? Or are you still kind of figuring who you are out now that you're spending more time by yourself?
Well, what I'm trying to figure out is how to make the days not so boring. I used to work all the time. People would say that, oh, you're always working. You're always working. And I was always working because I would take jobs. Sometimes I'd take jobs that my agents would say, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. But I, yeah. I just wanted to, it was my play.
So what can we get John to do to fill these days?
Get him an acting job.
There are movie theaters. There's a lot of things to do in LA. There are parks. There are events. Why don't you put yourself out there? You say you're going to do something three times a week, three nights a week. And during the days, a few days, make a sort of a, write down a list of things. My therapist told me to do this. Like, fill your schedule with things. You don't have to pack it, but like, have something. What's Monday? Oh, it's going to be another boring day. Well, what can you do to change that? What can you do for Monday? Where can you go? What can you experience? I mean, at 79, you've probably experienced quite a bit. Yes, I'm not going to get into Freddie Mercury again. I can't believe you don't remember having sex with Freddie Mercury, although you know you did. I mean, if I had sex with Nicole Kidman, I would go, I remember sex with Nicole Kidman.
Yeah.
Anyway, we don't have to get into that. I know that recently I heard that you quit drinking wine. You've been hanging out with Paul Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been doing these cons and Batman stuff and the great Paul Williams, who wrote so many great songs. Do you know he wrote The Carpenters?
What?
He wrote that song.
Only just begun.
No, Monday.
What's that one? Monday.
No, I think that's Mama's in the Pampas.
I thought so.
Anyway, but you supposedly you quit. Did you quit drinking or you quit drinking wine? And why did you do that?
Because I found if I drank one glass, it threw me off.
In a bad way.
Yeah. So I stopped. And I thought, okay. I thought first I could just drink one. And then I just drank one. And it tilted me.
And you didn't like how you were acting? Did people ever say, hey, I don't like, you know,
yep.
how you act?
Well, that's when I had too much. Because I used to, you know, go to dinner and have a... just keep you know,
a bottle of wine,
a bottle of wine, and then another bottle of wine. If there,
yeah.
But it got so I could only, if I had one, it would throw me off kilter. And I thought, can I really do that? Stop. And I don't miss it now.
Are you, that's good that you don't miss it.
But I remember somebody else, a guy in Baltimore that used to be very, very funny. He was older than me, but he started, when he would drink, it changed who he was. And I thought that's happening to me now.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it.
Here's what people don't understand. You alone are enough. You're just enough. You have such a great personality. You're so much fun to be around. You don't need it. Especially you say it alters you. It makes you someone else. That's sort of, I don't need, a lot of people said, oh, remember when we got shit-faced at the, I go, I wasn't drunk. I'm just fun and I probably look like I'm drunk.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need it. I've never really loved alcohol. But it's good that you're aware of it and that you're like, you know, why do I need this?
Mm-hmm.
You know? I know that we've talked about this in the past. I know that you're a big Alzheimer's advocate and you do the walks. You did it for your dad who passed away from Alzheimer's. My grandfather died of Alzheimer's. My grandmother died of Alzheimer's. Now being like 79 years old, are you sort of obsessed or thinking, oh my God, what if I have Alzheimer's? Because every time I forget something, I'm like, oh, why don't I know this? Why can't I think about this? You just said this. Does it kind of like weigh on you? Like, I got to go to the doctor. I got to get a CAT scan or whatever the hell they do.
I wonder if it is. I wonder about that. So, I mean, my memory's not as good as it used to be, like I say. So I don't know if it's going to get worse if I got a play, you usually have at least 4 weeks of rehearsal. So maybe I could get that, you know, those 4 weeks in. No, I want to play Prospero before I go.
That's a demanding role.
Yeah, big, big. I did a staged reading of it once with some people. So we read it, but I didn't, so we didn't have to learn it. And I think, could I learn it now? I mean, is my mind that okay?
Do you, would you, if somebody offered it to you, would you say yes, even out of fear?
Yeah.
You would do it even if you were like, I don't know if I could do this. You would just take the chance?
You know, if
is that scary to you?
Yeah. Yeah. What I'd hope to do if I could find a place and to do it and a good director who would
worked with you.
Yeah. Jack O'Brien is who I'd want.
Right.
Because I've worked with him a lot and Shakespeare and stuff down in San Diego. So, but if I had enough time to just, you know, if I just read it every day.
You think you could do it?
I think I could.
I think you could too. And I think it probably gets in your head because I haven't acted in a while. I haven't done this.
Yeah.
This is how we all feel. When I don't act for a while, I'm like, I don't think I can learn these lines. It would take me forever. And you know what? It would. And then once it's kind of, you got it in your memory, your mind, it's amazing how you train it. You train it by learning and learning and learning and memorizing. And when you don't, it slows down and goes back to that kind of the way it might have been or worse. Mm. But it's like anything else. It's a muscle. So the fact that you have the bravery to be like, fuck yeah, I do it, is amazing that you take it, because I would be chicken shit. I'd be like, no, I'm going to start out with just a couple scenes. And if I like that, and if I'm doing it, I'm managing, I'll work my way up, I'll build it. You're like going Prospero. I'm like, Jesus Christ, John. But you've always had that attitude. Since I've known you, you've always been one to take risks, to try things, to be creative, a good scene partner. I mean, working with you, I think I improved substantially as an actor because I would learn my lines even more because I wanted to, in a way, impress you. I wanted you to, almost like a father figure, Like, I wanted you to be proud. I wanted to show John, Tony Award winner, all these things. I wanted you to like me and respect me. And I always put a lot of weight on that sort of thing just because, just to make me better. And it did. But I guess you don't lose that. You still have that in you, you know?
I hope so.
Well, you do. You do. I think that maybe, you know, what would be good for you, maybe good for me. What if we just got into an acting class? Or what if we got into something fucking just to sharpen our skills and start working on scenes?
I did that when I was here because when I moved out to California and I started making money, then I would take jobs and make money. But I wasn't enjoying
the work.
Yeah. And there was a teacher that I know a lot of people worked with out here, a man named Milton Katselis. And I thought I should go to him. So I asked somebody at the gym one day that I knew that studied with him, can I go to a class and look at a class? And he asked Milton, and Milton said, yeah, bring him. And so I studied with him. And he said, Milton said to me one day, he said, you'd closed up shop. You'd stopped. It's like you weren't working anymore. So he got me back to enjoying the work again.
That's interesting, because I think it's the enjoyment I miss, but I don't look at anything as enjoyment in terms of, you know, acting. Nothing really inspires me. So I wonder if I could bring back that element of, like, you remember in college or high school when you're just reading scenes with people, mm-hmm. or you're just improvising, mm-hmm. or you're playing games or tongue twisters, and there was an element of fun. And my therapist told me, you have to do whatever you do, there has to be an element of fun in it, or you're not going to enjoy it. So maybe that's also what I need. Maybe it's something, getting a teacher like that goes, let me bring the fun back.
He died.
Oh, that's
Milton
not fun.
Died.
That's
yeah.
not fun.
No.
What fun things did he bring back to you?
He just, I don't know. I mean, I did more scenes than anybody in the class. Because, I mean, I started acting again. I started working again. And I was loving the work. So, but yeah, this not working and this, you know, or this strike that we're on, who knows?
It puts you in a little bit of a lull.
Yeah. So I don't know where to go, but you know, stage actors, we can work.
That's true.
Can't we? I mean, yeah.
Stage actors can work.
Yeah.
I believe, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not part of the AMPTP, is it? I don't know. Have you struck?
No.
Have you striked?
No.
You haven't?
No, I don't. I want to work, but...
No. I mean, do you want to get out there and strike with your fellow SAG members, with other actors?
Yeah, I understand it, but I haven't gone out.
Would you?
I guess I should.
Well, why don't we go one day?
Okay.
Me and you, we'll just go strike for an hour and then have lunch.
All right.
We could just strike and support the cause.
Okay.
I think we should.
All right.
Do you, obviously, this is a stupid question, theater or film, if you had to choose?
Theater.
Why is that?
Well, that's where I started. And when you're doing it, you kind of know if it's right, because you can feel the audience, whether they're listening, whether they're laughing or not laughing, or whether they're weeping or not weeping. But that's sort of where I learned, in front of an audience.
And that's sort of also the instant gratification, the immediate validation.
Right, exactly.
Do you go to therapy?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
You have a therapist?
Yes.
And what do you talk to him about?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't feel like I don't know what else to say. Like the other day, we were talking. He said, you got 10 more minutes. I said, I don't know what to say. So he said, okay. And we stopped. So I think, I don't know. Maybe I'm not being honest with myself, and there are things I need to talk about that we're not talking about. So I don't, but now with us talking, We do Tuesdays, so maybe next Tuesday I'll talk about some of this stuff.
I think that's, it's you being so honest and open. Like I said, I mean, before it, people listening, people can understand. They could, it's real. It's real. And it's, you know, it happens to all of us and we all have our demons. And if like, you know, for so long, I wanted everybody to like me, including my therapist. I don't want you to think there's anything wrong with me. Then why are you going to therapy? You know, but ultimately, you know, we have to dig deep. I just had therapy right before you came. And I started talking about disappointment and how much of a disappointment I think I've felt as a child, that I was always disappointing everybody, my parents and people. And I just wasn't this, I wasn't that. And no matter how much you work on things, it stays with you. Even a part of it will always stay with you.
That's what I call less than. When I said less than, that's what I feel about myself a lot,
but
less than.
And exactly, me too. But you shouldn't. You shouldn't feel less than, because look at everything you've achieved. You have to, and that's hard. Sometimes you're like, I know, I've had success. I've made money. I've worked with great people, but I don't feel that. And that's what therapy is for, is to try and break through where you feel it, you understand it, you connect with it, and you don't let it rule your life. And you try to make changes that will fulfill that void. You know what I mean? So I think that you deserve it. I mean, as far, you know, you're a wonderful human being. There's not a more giving, lovable, talented guy out there. And you deserve to be happy, even though, you know, you may not feel like, you know, you're trying to understand all these things. And look, I'm saying this because I feel the same thing. I struggle with it constantly. And but it's worth it. It's worth it to just say, you know, do you tell him I feel less than?
Mm-hmm.
You do tell him that. Mm. And he says, why?
I don't know what he says.
Well, get a new therapist. I mean, that's what you need. I used to obsess about death. Do you obsess with death? Do you think about, oh my God, how many years do I have left? Or how many, or does it not concern you?
Yeah. I just wonder how it's going to happen. Well, I hope it goes quick.
Well, of course.
Yeah. I don't want to suffer.
Well, here's the thing.
My next birthday, I'll be 80, which seems sort of, I've never been 80 before. That's big.
Yeah.
That's a big number.
It's, you know, my grandfather lived till he's 95. He got Alzheimer's though at 90, but like his body and everything was like, if he didn't have Alzheimer's, he would have lived to 100 and he had a good life. So I think what we do too is I'm like, oh my God, I'm 40. I can't believe I'm 40. I'm so old. Then I'm 50. And I'm like, why was I fucking thinking that when I was 40? Stop thinking about how old you live now.
Yeah.
There's no reason you can't start doing things that make you happier. There's the strike's going to be over. You will work again. You'll be doing those things. But in the meantime, now's a chance to work on you. Now's a chance to find out what makes you tick, what makes you sad, what drives you, what holds you back. It's like, work on all that. That should be your mission now. That's your work. Do that and try to fill your schedule with things to do. You know, go to New York more often. How often do you go to New York?
I'm going next Friday, Saturday, Sunday, whatever day.
After, what are you going to do? You're going to go see some shows?
After Salt Lake City, I'm going to New York.
And you're going to go see some shows, I'm sure?
Sure.
And you love that?
Yes.
But when you're sitting there watching it, you're like, oh, I want to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you, do you feel like you're more critical as an actor watching other actors? Or are you able to sit back and really just enjoy things?
I remember there's this thing that when I was doing a Lisbon Traviata, I was studying about Callas, and she said, you can learn from anybody, good or bad, good and bad. So, you know, I've tried to look at that. If there are, you know, some actors that are doing something that's not honest or truthful or whatever, I try to look at it and think, well, da-da-da-da-do-do-do-do.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So what he's doing is, so you just learn from everyone.
Yeah.
But you still enjoy shows. You go to shows and you really enjoy them.
Sure, yeah.
Is it like a whole night out that you and Adam have a nice dinner, you go see a show?
Well, sometimes, yeah. It depends. I mean, some stuff I see on my own, very rarely. Usually we look at those things together. Yeah.
What about shows here? What about Los Angeles? What about, there's so many shows they're doing here at the Pantages and things. Why do you go to more shows here?
You know, I don't rightly know. And I'm glad I came here today. So, yeah, we should go see some stuff here.
I would go see a show with you.
Yeah.
I think that would be a blast.
Yeah.
Doesn't that sound like fun? You're like, what am I going to do this week? Well, I'm going to go see a show. I'm going to go have lunch with an old friend. I'm going to go to this park that I haven't been to. There's so many places that I haven't even been to. And I need to do these things too. So, I think sometimes we have to open up our eyes and just, and there's more to it than just what's in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times I'm in my house and I'm like, okay, just interviewed John. I guess I'll take a nap. I like naps. Do you nap?
Sometimes.
What time do you go to bed?
Around 10 or so.
And you wake up at 6.
Yeah.
That's a long day. That's a long day.
Yeah, it is.
It's hard to fill your days no matter what. I mean, look at Ryan over here. Don't ask him a question because he can't talk. But like, you know, he probably has days where he's just bored off his ass. And he's a lot younger than we are. Bastard.
Son of a bitch.
You're known a lot, in the film world, not so much in the theater world, as being playing great villains. Do you love playing villains? Was there a time in your life you're like, well, I don't want to play the villain anymore. I don't want to play the bad guy. I want to play, you know, this. Or did you, how did you work with that?
I don't know. Kale, what's a critic's name from the New Yorker?
All I remember is Canby.
Kale. She called me. In the New Yorker, she called me the prime rotter of the 80s.
The prime rotter. Meaning rotten characters?
Yeah, villains, yeah. Prime rotter of the 80s.
That's awesome.
I know, it was awesome.
Well, how could you, yeah.
Yeah, but the villains move the play along.
Yes, they do. They're the most interesting.
The active, yeah, sure.
They're the most interesting.
Yeah.
Especially when there's subtext and there's development in the character and reasons why the character is bad.
All that stuff.
You know, you used to play Lionel Luther and you always told me, and it just resonated throughout the run of the show for me, was that you have good intentions. I'm not evil. I love my son.
Yeah, because people, you know, the villains, they don't think they're old, but see, but they started writing. They were going to make me a villain when we started.
Yeah.
And I thought, no. And this was when I was studying with Milton when all that happened, and he would used to say, "You're not going to get this all together. Just start sneaking this stuff in." So that's what I started doing.
Yeah,
because I realized, no, this man is a father, and he's trying to make his son a better, stronger man, and slowly the writers started picking up on that.
Yes,
and going with it. So I felt I had a lot of power with them.
I don't know if there's a character that we talk about more than you on the show. How much your performance? Like, we talk about Annette's performance a lot, but you, we always talk about on our other podcast how much you bring. There's an episode. Well, we'll bring that up later. But there's just these moments where somehow you feel for Lionel, even though you hate him. He does these things to you or to people, to other characters, and then but the way you play it, it's so ambiguous. It's so subtextual or whatever. It's so it's layered. It's not just bad. Because it's easy to play that. And how many roles do you see where a lot of times you're like, oh, that guy's just bad. I saw this movie. They remade Fright Night 2. I know, I'm a big horror movie nut. I have the poster. Tom Holland signed it. But they made Fright Night 2. And I liked the movie, but the thing I thought didn't work was the lead character that was originally played by Chris Sarandon, who we both love. Chris Sarandon played the next door neighbor, who was the villain, with such charm.
Hmm.
and you liked him. And but he was so bad. He was the bad vampire. And in this one, he was just bad. And it just didn't have near the impact. Mm. And so that shows you that a lot of times it's in the writing. If they would have written a scene or something showing that he was layered and charismatic, something.
Right.
And a lot of writers fail to do that. And the fact that they started catering towards that that sort of gift that you brought the show.
I've never done a character. It was 7 years because they killed me in
I killed you, dude.
Yeah, I know. And that was
I killed you.
And I talked to the writers. I said, listen, when you do write me off, let Lix kill me, because I figured that would really be who you became.
That was the thing that pushed me over the, no pun intended, pushed you out a window.
Yeah, yeah.
You told them that.
I asked them. I said, listen, when you kill me, let Lex do it. And and they bought it.
That was one of the most pinnacle moments of the show. To me, for my character anyway.
For us.
Yeah,
both
for
of
us.
Yeah.
And the look you gave me, it was almost like, I remember doing the scene with you. I remember, and I don't remember a lot. But we're standing there, and I'm about to push you, and you just looked at me like letting go. And when you're falling out the window, sorry for spoiler alerts for Ryan. Did you know that happens? So. Yeah. Anyway, you fall, and just the look in your eye, it's almost like you're at peace with it. Like it's time. It was time. And this is the way I want it to go. It was just, I don't know, it was enigmatic and heavy and... But you always brought that, and it always, like, because I would get bored. I would do scenes with certain people or, you know, and it was like, oh, I'm going to the bar. I'm getting another drink. I'm sitting at my desk. I'm getting knocked out. I'm, you know, this, that, the love triangle. But when I saw that I had a scene with you, I knew it was going to be 10 times better than it was on the page, because we were going to bring it.
We were good together.
We were good together.
We were really good together.
Yeah, we were. Mm-hmm. There was an excitement. Did you enjoy, if you look back, do you think you really loved working on Smallville? Was it something that you go, you know, this was a many years of my life that I spent on this show and playing this character? It's probably one of the most well-known characters you played, right?
Yeah, I loved it. I loved it.
You loved it.
And then, you know, then 7, I was gone. And then 9 and 10.
Yeah.
They made him just a villain. The writers were, they didn't, I was so excited that when they said an alternate universe, that they were going to come up with some great stuff, but they just played out and out stereotypical villains.
So you didn't like that?
No.
Did you tell them? What are you going to say?
Yeah. It was beyond them. They had, there was no imagination in that alternate universe.
Yeah, well, at least you had 7 good years. Remember, you were
I had 7 great years. I really were. I had a ball. It's the longest I've ever played one part.
What was the second? Brimstone?
Oh, they pulled the plug so fast on that show.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what was the second long? What other shows were you on for this was the longest, because mostly you were filming in theater.
I was what?
Mostly you did film in theater. So you didn't do a lot of, like, TV series where you were regular.
Yeah.
You played parts like you were in Law and Order, right?
Yeah. Different
parts. Done many parts.
But I've never spent 7 years with the same character.
Same character.
So it was, and it was wonderful because they were writing good stuff until 9 and 10 came.
Yeah. That's why I left in 7. When Alan Miles left and, you know, Kristen was leaving, John Schneider was already dead. I'd already killed you. I'm like, there's nothing left for me. There's nothing left for Lex to do here. You know, he doesn't have this antagonist anymore. He doesn't have the antagonist of John Schneider's character, who always had a thing for Lex. It was just sort of, I need to move on. I need to move on.
And you moved.
And it was funny because I remember the president of the studio took me to dinner and said, what will make you stay for another 3 years? I said, nothing. And he was so insulted. He goes, look at Julianne Margulies. I go, what about her? Well, what has she done since ER or whatever it was? And I go, And now fast forward, she did The Good Wife and got awards and is making so much money. But he was just, you know, doing, using whatever tactic he could to get me to stay. And then I said, well, you know, just make me an offer. And they offered me the same money. Not a dime more. Is that how you get somebody to come back for 3 years? You just say, hey, you're mowing my lawn, right? I know you want to mow someone else's lawn, but you know, if you mow my lawn for 3 more years, I'm going to give you the same money. I don't know if it's the best analogy, but you get what I'm saying. But yeah, I said no. I said no on that. This is awesome. I feel like this is just having a conversation, right?
That's what we're doing.
Yeah. I mean, I really didn't think of what I was going to talk to you about. I just felt like I'm just going to talk to John when he's here.
Uh-huh.
We've gotten to therapy. We've gotten into your days. We've gotten into your, you know, getting older. Does Adam, do you guys, you've been together so long since what, 80?
30 years.
30 years.
Yeah.
Do you call each other out on whatever? You don't even hesitate. You're like, John, you're being an asshole. John, this, Adam, you're being a dick. Do you guys say that?
Uh-huh.
And you talk it out.
Yep. We're learning sometimes, but we're better. I mean, it's taken a while to really iron them out. But we get through them.
What's the key to a good relationship or one that lasts 30 years? What do you think?
Honesty, I guess.
Do you think you weren't always honest in the beginning and throughout? You just, it sort of developed?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Who is the best actor you ever worked with?
Oh.
The one that just sticks in your mind. You're like, this is the best actor I've ever worked with, besides me.
Oh, boy. You know, I wanted, it's almost that I did, and I chickened out too. Geraldine Page had a company. She worked for a little company.
Right.
She made no money, but she did all these plays that she wanted to do, and they were with some replacements, because I worked with her in White Nights.
Yeah.
So I guess it would be Geraldine Page, because last night we watched Sweet Bird of Youth. Have you ever seen her do that? Okay, you got to watch her do Sweet Bird of Youth sometime. She does the film of it, and she's just genius. But she offered me, she wanted me to, when this one guy was leaving, to replace him. And I thought, I don't know if I could do it without a rehearsal period. So I made up a lie that I had another job and couldn't do it.
When was this?
It was years ago.
Years ago.
Yeah.
You regret that?
Yeah. Because I could have worked with her, you know, when we did the movie, we were in the same scenes together, but it wouldn't have been like really playing with her.
Right.
So I regret that I was chicken, that I didn't know, but it was because I didn't know if I could pick it up out of midair and without a rehearsal period.
Fear got in the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, fear gets in the way. Sometimes I think fear is okay. Sometimes fear is telling yourself, usually it's because, you know, you don't think you could do it and you should try to overcome that fear. But sometimes fear kind of tells you this is going to be a lot of work, a lot of stress. It's going to fucking kill you. It's going to be like exhausting mentally and physically. Do you want to do that? Do you want to feel like that?
But
no, I don't. So I'm not going to do it.
Uh-huh. But I like to work so much that I probably would have done it.
Right.
But
it was just the fact of
going in, being thrown into it without a real rehearsal period.
Right. But who's the best actor you've worked with? You think Geraldine Page is the best actor based on the movie you did with her? Or is there someone else, whether you did a play when you won your Tonys, someone you were like, this was one of the best actors I've ever worked with?
I've worked with so many good actors, but I don't know, nothing rings as the most special one.
Right.
So
just a lot of good actors.
Yeah.
Have you worked with any actors that it was miserable to work with them?
Yes.
Where it just was not fun?
Yes.
Was Bill Murray one of them?
No.
Oh, okay. I just wanted,
he was Scrooge. He was in Scrooge,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Oh no, he was great to work with.
He was.
Oh yeah. He. I mean, there was one line that after we was walking. Anyway, I couldn't figure the line in they wrote didn't make much sense or anything. But right after lunch, he just said, "I got it. This is it. Say this." Right. So right when he was, I was walking him to the elevator, and I knew what the line was and everything, and just as the elevator door was closing, I threw the line at him, and you could see him go like that. So he was terrific. I loved working with Bill Murray.
Really?
Oh yeah. Why? Does he have a reputation?
No. You hear some stuff, but he's one of the legendary, you know, actors. But like, you know, some things came out, and some people have told me he's not the most pleasant person to work with.
Oh, I found he was great. Yeah.
Great. I like that. Who was an actor that? I mean, you don't have to throw. Maybe. Hopefully, they've died.
I'm not going to name anybody that I didn't like.
Is there someone who intimidated you?
No, I can't think of anybody because I usually sort of know what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
With it, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm alive to. I saw Geraldine Page in one of these plays at that little theater where she made no money just doing these things. And there was a moment she had, it was an Ibsen play. It was about the son, I think. There's somebody gets syphilis or somebody. And there was this moment that she did with her son where you thought, I mean, she was trying to love him, but she sort of went like something. I can't describe what it was, but it was something. It was something that was just so
jarring,
whatever. And when we were flying back from when we were doing White Nights, we were flying back on the airplane together, and she was talking about, you know, Rip, her husband, and da da da, and this play and that play. And I said, there was this moment with your son in the play, and she said, oh, that boy, he used to drive me crazy. I hated acting with him. And what I saw was herself being, but it worked in the play.
Being upset with him.
Yeah. But
it worked. Yeah, she used it.
Yeah. She hated working with him, and probably he said something that was like blah 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 something. So
and she was like, oh
yeah, she just took it away. She was in the moment. I mean,
did you, when you were younger, when you started doing plays, did you want to be famous?
It was not fame. I wanted to be an actor.
But you didn't care if you were famous. You just wanted to be an actor.
Well, the famous part would be nice. But I mean, yeah. But that was not
it wasn't your goal.
My goal was to play parts, to be in plays.
But I think that's partly true. I think that we, you know, like we talked about earlier, the validation you get and like that feeling you get when people immediately respond to you and like you and validate you and the audience. I think that it comes with that. It's almost like I love this and I want to be great. And with that, I want to be famous and do all these big parts and people to know me. Did you want people to recognize you and know you and give you adoration?
That's not bad. No, that's pretty good.
But it have to do with something where you know, you get this adoration, you get this, and with that, you get the fame. You get the fame and you get both. If you're a good actor, if you're good enough, you'll be famous. And was there a point where you thought, I should be more famous? I'm like, you were had such an ego. Did you ever have such an ego where you're like, I'm so good. I'm a Tony Award winner twice. I should be getting these bigger roles. Why am I not being considered for these blockbuster movies?
I only won one Tony.
Oh.
I was nominated for two.
Oh, yeah.
But I only won one.
Oh, okay.
So.
did you ever get thinking cocky? Where I think we've all thought that.
At one time, I thought I should get a press agent. To, you know, to sort of, yeah. So I guess I did.
Promote you and give you more than you, more, right.
But I thought if I did, I could get maybe better jobs.
Right.
So I don't know what it was.
Did you?
But, but I do, I mean, I've written, here's what it was. There's this show that was Once Upon a One More Time. It was all the.
Once Upon a Time?
No, Once Upon a One More Time.
Oh.
It was a musical with all of Britney, what was
Spears?
It? Spears. Spears' Whoops. Did she do Whoops?
I did it again.
Okay, so, but it had nothing to do with that. It was but that was a song in it, but the male song sang it. I had to get out of it because Adam was sick and he said, I need you to take care of me. And it was going to open in Washington, D.C. So I got out of the, I had to quit the show.
Oh.
I decided to. It was a very decision, but it was my partner, my life partner.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't want to be separated because he needed me to take care of him.
Yeah.
And, I remember I wrote a couple of, like letters or whatever, or somehow, or found their emails and complimented their performances. And I heard back from them, oh my God, coming from you, I think you're a wonderful actor. I mean, that to me makes me very happy. If other actors, it goes back to when I wouldn't take an acting class because I thought the other actors would laugh at me or not laugh at me if I was being, or would judge me. So, right. So to hear it from a fellow actor go, this coming from you, it makes me so happy.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, that
your colleagues, your peers.
Yeah.
I feel the same way. All right. This is called Shit Talking with John Glover. It's rapid fire. These are from the top tier patrons. I love you. Go to patreon.com/insideyou.
But I have to think fast.
Rapid fire. You just have to answer fast.
Oh, dear.
But no. You don't have to be, you can answer it as slow as you want.
Okay. All right.
Nathan, do you wish your Walking Dead character had become the Negan? Is that the character? Negan of the spinoff? Do you hope to one day have a role like Negan and be a visceral bad guy?
Was that the character I played?
Negan?
No, he was, it was Bobby. No. Anyway.
Oh, no, I know what he's saying. He's saying like the Negan of the spinoff. Like Negan was a big role. And so do you want to be like the Negan of the spinoff?
I didn't watch the show, so I didn't know what that is.
But do you wish the Walking Dead character had become a lot bigger?
Well, yeah, I think I was sad that they killed me off so soon. I thought there was a lot going that they could have. I wanted to stay on the show longer.
David P. John, you're an amazing man. I have no questions, but just want to thank you for your amazing talent and sharing it with us.
Well, who said that?
Dave P.
Who's Dave P?
He's my patron. Tell Dave you love him and thank you.
Dave, I love you and thank you.
Perfect. Jen T., your partner is an incredible artist. Are there any artistic hobbies outside of acting that you like to partake in during your free time?
Well, scarf making. Yes.
Leanne, if you could go back and give your younger self a piece of advice, what would it be and why?
Well, if Geraldine Page wanted you to play with her, I would play with her now. Isn't she fun? Yeah.
That's amazing. Michelle K., out of all the amazing roles you've had the opportunity to play, what one has stuck with you the most and why? This could be your own thoughts of like which role that you're like, this was the role for me. This is the role that I loved playing. This is the one that sticks with me.
You know, I did this movie several Marches ago. It was in March, I remember. It's called The Home. It was James DeMonaco.
Right.
Did you watch those Purge movies? Are you aware of these Purge movies?
I know them.
Well, they scare the crap out of me. But he wrote this movie called The Home, and it's about an old age home. And I was a resident of the home. But I also taught an act, and I was an off-Broadway actor, and I taught an acting class to the other residents in the home. And I thought this part was... When I read the script, he offered it to me, and I read the script, and I thought, how does he know me so well? I mean, this guy.
Wow.
They're looking for a distributor of it. It's called The Home.
You've seen it?
No, I've not seen it yet, but
I want to see it now.
Well, I want to see it now too. They said they'd get, when I got to New York, they'd screen it for me so I could see it.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
You got to let me know how that goes.
I will. I will.
You seem excited about it.
I was so excited about it. I even did one scene where I was naked, butt naked.
Really?
Yeah. They don't show anything. I remember them saying, because they were talking about the way the scene was set up and the way the camera moved. And I heard the one woman was, two women cameramen, the camera operators, and said, well, the chair is hiding his penis, so we don't see his penis there.
Are you happy with your penis?
Well, it could be a little larger.
Okay.
All right.
Raj, tell me about a recent time you felt worry-free.
When I was doing this part, I just told you about. Yeah.
That's when you just kind of...
Well, because I felt it was me. I thought, how does he know me so well? It was, and I had a great time making that
Rachel
movie.
D.
Okay.
John, I was fortunate to see you on Broadway in Nikolai and the Others. Do you have any plans for future stage work? Is there a dream role you'd love to play on stage? Well, you said that already.
Prospero. Yeah.
There you go.
Okay. Anybody out there want to do a Tempest?
Man, that's a tough play.
Yeah. Oh, it's so beautiful though.
So, look, you have a lot to talk about with your therapist.
Thanks to you.
Well, right. I have a lot to talk about with mine. It's just part of the, it's at least there's not so much a stigma, not as much of a stigma attached to therapy and, being less than or feeling less than. It's like for so many years, it's just like, I felt like I shouldn't, my dad doesn't go to therapy. He doesn't do this. he must be a real man. And I'm like, no, dude, you want to become a better human being? Talk to someone, get rid of your shit. You want to feel better about yourself, and we all deserve to love each other and all that. But I love you. I do.
Mutual.
Seriously, I love you, and I would be there for you in a second if you needed me.
And I feel the same way about you. You're my baby.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Dad. This is always a pleasure, and thanks for getting so personal and deep and honest with me. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael.
Well, I love you, Johnny Glover. You're a tremendous, tremendous talent, tremendous man, and I really, really appreciate you. So thanks for coming on again and supporting your boy. I love you. Why don't we get into the top tiers?
Let us do it.
Top tiers. These are the top tiers. They get their names shouted out in every episode. They support the podcast by going to patreon.com/talkville or patreon.com/insideofyou. Become a member today. Become a patron today. And we love you. Without you guys, I couldn't do this. And a big shout out to my producer, Bryce, who I love, and Jason and Ryan, who's here. Couldn't do the show without you guys. Love you. Ryan, are you good?
I'm good. Yeah, I got up early this morning. And I'm
tired as hell.
We're recording this in the late afternoon, and we generally don't.
Yeah, and that's why we're tired.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to get through it. But yeah. It's fun when we know
like
we have
a good guest. 11 a.m., 10 a.m. start.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so tired.
But today, yeah. And also, it's November. We're recording this on November 1st.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's November has just started, and it feels like the end of the year already, and I'm sad,
Yeah, I know. I'm kind of happy that for the next 2 months, I don't have a ton of stuff to do.
Yeah.
Not for the most part. I hope everybody's healthy and happy. And I also want to give one of my best friends, who I love and adore and is a big supporter of this podcast, Alex Fadovich. I want to give her all my love, and I want you to give all your prayers because her papa passed away, and she loved him dearly. And he was an awesome, awesome man. I got to meet him a few times, and he was what an energy, a ball of energy. And Alex, I'm almost tearing up, but I'm not going to do it. I love you, and I'm thinking about you, and we'll help you get through this. We will. There's a lot of love. Here are the top tier shout outs. Nancy D, Leah and Kristen, Little Lisa, Yukiko. Nancy D, it was good to see you in Orlando. Damn good. Yukiko. Jill E, Brian H, I miss you, Brian. We got to go to a concert. Nico P, I miss you. Robert B, I miss you. I'm going to just say it to everybody. Robert B, Jason W, Sophie M, Raj C, Joshua D, Jennifer N, Stacy L, Jamal F, Janelle B, Ashley Ryan, Mike E, L, Dan Supremo, 99 more, Santiago M, I got the statue, Chad W, Leanne P, Maddie S, Belinda N, Dave H, Sheila G, Brad D, Ray Harada, Tabitha T, Tom N, Talia M, Betsy D, Rhiannon C, Corey K, Dev Nexon, Michelle A, Jeremy C, Brandy D, Joey M, Eugene and Leah, so good seeing you in D.C., and all the rest of you. Corey, Angela F, Mel S, Christine S, Eric H, Shane R, Andrew M, Amanda R, Jen B, Kevin E, Stephanie K, Jarell, Jam and J, Leanne J, Luna R, Mike F, Stone H, Stay Wild, Moonchild, Brian L, Kendall L, Kara C, Jessica B, Kyle F, Marisol P, Kaylee J, Brian A, Ashley F, Mary Louise L, Romeo B, Frank B, Jen T, Nikki L, did we say Little Lisa? I don't see your name on here. April R, Randy S, Derek N, JDW, Oral P, Ginger Insomniac, Rachel D, Lorelei L, Melissa H, Nicholas W, Stephanie and Evan, Charlene A, Don G. Do we not say Little Lisa?
Little Lisa's in the three spot as per usual.
Was she?
Yeah.
Did I say that?
Not cleanup today, but she's batting third.
Well, Little Lisa, thanks for the shirt too, Little Lisa. Thank you, everybody who sends me things. Some people send me things and it's like, stop sending me things. You're too nice and you don't need to. I have enough stuff. You're so nice. Gosh. All right. Thank you so much for listening. I love you. From the Hollywood Hills in Hollywood, California, I am Michael Rosenbaum.
I'm Ryan Tails.
Little wave to the camera.
And, bye.
Be good to yourself, please. Just do it. Love yourself. It's the holidays coming up. It's important. And we'll see you next week.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.